Timothy Williams.
Four o'clock, standing tall, feeling good here on a Monday. Seed Williams back in the box, rocking with you. Got a couple of guys with me, J-Dog and Doug Douglas in the house, working the ones and twos. DJs battling on this day. Plenty to get to today. Coming up, Andy Esco drops at the bottom of the hour. Andy Esco of Logical Approach. We'll talk about World Series, all road teams winning. Incredible, huh? We'll also talk about the game tonight, Thursday night, and a couple of key games down the road in week number 9 and one key college football game. Full 20 lighters up, dope. We'll be firing at you, and of course, that final go round to close things out. Well, what's up, J-Dog?
Not much, sir, not much.
Oh. You know what today is, right?
Oh, good. All right, hold on. National Chocolate Cake Day.
He's on top of it. I got my Snickers bar. I didn't bring it in here.
Oh, yeah, no. You don't want to get in trouble.
It's National Chocolate Day, baby.
Oh,
yummy.
Oh, man.
Love me some chocks. Mmm. Anyway, a lot of stuff to get to. We'll get to the Rebels, and the hope is running out for me in this. They got to sweep the board now, but I want to talk about a couple of things that happened in football before we get to rocking the NFL week number 8. And that is what took place in that Bronco loss to the Colts. Fabulous game. The Broncos had to lead the whole way, okay? And down the stretch in the end, their offensive coordinator, Rich Scagliario, he basically laid down. And Rich Flacco was pissed. Now, let me say this about Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco's a 10-year veteran. And a lot of people are going to disagree with what I have to say on this. Dude's 34 years of age. He's played for 10 years with the Ravens. He was Rookie of the Year and made the playoffs in 2008, 2012, that great Super Bowl down in the Superdome, 34-31 victory over the 49ers. He was MVP of Super Bowl 47. This year, he comes to the Broncos. Now, he's never said anything. He's Mr. Zipper. Okay, he's never complained. Down the stretch, the Ravens weren't doing that well. You never heard him say anything. They trade him. He comes to Denver, and on campus, it's a culture shock. And what he's realizing now is he's dealing with a new team and a new type of philosophy. And he was pretty pissed off, and he let it go in the presser yesterday. He said afterwards, hey, listen, we're 2-6, 2-5 at the time going in. He says, let's go for it. Let's try to win the game instead of not trying to lose the game. And everyone jumped on him. All the analysts, all the former NFL players, everyone I've heard came after Joe Flacco and said, that's supposed to stay in the locker room. Okay, I get it. But here's a dude who he's not used to playing softball football. And he was very angry with the fact that his offensive coordinator didn't give him a chance and his team to win the football game. They kind of laid down with the ball offensively. They played soft flag football. J-Dog, what are your thoughts?
Okay, well, first of all, there's a reason Joe Flacco isn't in Baltimore anymore. His talents for maybe the last 5 years haven't been anywhere close to what they were the first 5 years. He's been really bad. And so for him to go, why don't we go for it? It's sort of like, dude, you're the reason why. You're the reason why we can't run a full playbook. You can't move. You overthrow everyone. If it were any other, like, regular quarterback, we would have
regular quarterback.
Yeah.
What do you mean by regular quarterback?
A guy who's not a statue. A guy who can move a little. A guy who can make all the throws, not just launch the
ball.
What
do you have in your playbook that can add to a statue quarterback? You brought him in, so if you bring him in, then you know what you have. In a situation like this, you're 2-5 going into this game. And you've got this game. You're winning this game. If you go for it, they're like at the 44-yard line of the Colts, right? It's fourth down and about 4 or 5, whatever the case may be. If you go for it and you make it game over, because they have like 1:43 left on the clock, and Brissett is licking his chops. He's like, okay, go ahead and punt it to me. They punt it to him. He makes this amazing play of not getting caught for a safety in the end zone, gets the ball out, gets a first down. Then they go down the football field and they win the football game. I'm not mad at Joe Flacco. I understand the code of the clubhouse and keeping things in the clubhouse. But this dude wants to win. I mean, look, you're talking about his big arm. He overthrows everybody because he's got a big cannon for an arm. However, he's a 10-year veteran in his 11th year, and he's on a new campus. He has to make the adjustment because he's in a whole new culture. Apparently a culture that ain't about winning right now. Let me say this. I think John Elway would be more mad at the AC, the OC, than he would be at his quarterback.
I don't know. I think that the entire Broncos organization is sort of a dumpster fire at this point, and you don't bring in Joe Flacco if you're looking to win. You bring in Joe Flacco if you're looking to tread water.
Look at all the other quarterbacks he tried. They went through four different quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Simeon, all these other guys, none of them worked out. So at least they brought in a guy that had some pedigree and some type of resume. This guy has a chip.
He hasn't won since, he hasn't been on a good team since, 2012.
But this is only a second team. He's only been on the Ravens his whole career.
If you take each individual Ravens teams, he was on three out of the 10 years he was with the Ravens. Maybe three of those teams were incredible.
I'm not going to fight you. I'm not mad at him. I understand his frustrations. I don't have a problem with what he said. Now, on to the Bears Chargers. I haven't mentioned the Chargers all year long on this show, but I'm going to do it now. The San Diego Cross LA Superchargers. That's right. They got the victory. The Bears at halftime, you talk about some problems. And Matt Nagy, the head coach, at going into the half, they had a chance to score. And they kept trying to run these plays that weren't going to work. Then they didn't have any timeouts. They ran the ball, had to clock it with 1 second left to kick a field goal to go in the half, 9-7, where they could have likely been up 13-7. Okay, clock management a problem. So the position second half, they had a chance to move the football closer to the goal. Their kicker is kind of shaky. They've had a history of shaky kickers. So this guy tries a field goal and misses. They lose the ball game. And then Matt Nagy is in the presser afterwards giving all the excuses of why we ran the football. We just basically downed it so we could get – we could have had a holding call. We could have fumbled it. There could have been an interception. He never said we could have got the first down and ran the clock out and got closer and kicked the ball for maybe an extra point field goal and won the game that way. I wasn't cool with what he did. And that's just my thought on him.
I mean, it reminds me of what Jacksonville did in the AFC Championship game a couple years ago, where with 50 seconds left, they took a knee because they were like, our offense is not equipped to go down the field and try to make something happen, so therefore we will just go into the locker room.
I get it.
And Trubisky is not equipped to lead a team game-winning drive. So
you think of all the guys they passed up to get him.
Yeah, but hey, that's what you got to do. You got to roll the dice if you want to win big.
And also, the trading deadline in the NFL is 1 o'clock tomorrow. The Cardinals made a move. They got Kenyon Drake from the Dolphins for some future choices. So that means David Johnson's job there is he's been injured most of his career. He's probably done. And one last thing before we get to the NFL, rocking the NFL, the 2-6 Rebels. They got to sweep the board now, brother. Colorado State.
They don't have to.
Hawaii, San Jose, and Reno. What do you mean they don't have to?
No, I mean, there are many possibilities. As long as they win the cannon, I'm happy.
Yeah, but I'm talking about Sanchez's job.
Hey, man.
Wait a minute.
if you were told, hey, don't do this, and if you do this, you'll lose your job. Hey, man, you gotta win those games. Win the games you can't win.
They
got to
sweep the board.
Okay, if he can do that, then it's cool. But if he can't, then he can't.
All right, what do you think? If he wins, let's say they beat Colorado State, they lose to Hawaii, they beat San Jose State and beat Reno, and they have five wins. Is she going to say, you beat Reno, we got the cannon, we're going to keep you?
No, I think she's going to say, you needed to make us bowl right. eligible, and you did not comply with my demands.
So he's got to sweep the board. All right, folk, let's do it. All right, let's get rocking. Rocking the NFL, week number 8. Start you off with the last thing we saw last night, the Packers and Kansas City without Patrick Mahomes. And Aaron Rodgers was sick. 3 touchdowns. Aaron Jones even sicker. 150 yards, a couple of TDs. The Jones!
Rodgers alone in the gun. Jones motion. Snap to Rodgers. Quick toss. Jones gets a block. Cuts it back. 40. 45. 50. He's off to the races. Down the left sidelines. To the 15. 10. 5. Touchdown. Aaron Jones. Oh, what a play. What a play by the Green Bay Packers. 67 yards.
All cuts courtesy of the NFL. This dude is smoke. You talk about Jonesing. Like I said, 150 yards, catching, 2 touchdowns. Rodgers had 3 TDs, 31-27. Packers go to 7-1. Chiefs fall to 5-3. Boy, they got to get busy next week. Hopefully Mahomes will be back. Then there were the Raiders and the Texans. The Raiders competing, man. Look, the Raiders may be the second best team in the AFC West, honestly, behind Kansas City. So, Deshaun Watson... 3 TDs. I mean, the way he's dancing around, get kicked in the eye, adjust his helmet, and he still strikes.
First and goal at the 9. Deshaun calls for the ball. Here's the snap. Watson looking. Pocket collapsing. Watson trying to get away. He does to the right. Throws to the end zone. Caught by Fells. Magical. Touchdown, Houston. And the Texans take the lead.
And that was the play where he got kicked in the eye. He got kicked in the eye through his face guard. Then, while falling, puts his hand down, grabs his helmet, and like, can't let me adjust this thing, and it throws a strike. He badass. 3 touchdowns. The bad thing is J.J. Watt with a shoulder injury now gone for the year. Titans go to 5-3. Raiders fall to 3-4. The Raiders are 3-4. They're basically a middle of the road 500 team. I think they're okay. Next up, the game we talked about, the Colts and the Broncos. Colts in first place. Texans basically need to stay even with them, or at least stay a half game behind. They won their game, so the Colts had to rally to get this victory. It was Adam Vinatieri with the long one.
From 52, Adam Vinatieri lining it up. Here it is. Snap, ball down. Kick is up. It's on its way. Has the distance. And it is... It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri knocks it down!
And that would be your final score. Vinatieri, by the way, he missed an extra point in this game. He's missed either 3 or 4, a total of 4 extra points or field goals combined this year. But when he needs to do it, he's money. Brissett also got it done. 15-13, your final score. Colts now 5-2, still a half game in front of the Texans in that division south of the AFC. Broncos go to 2-6, and Flacco, I want to compete, man. I just want to compete. Let's go for it. Then there were the mighty Chargers. The lightning bolts, when they strike hard. And the Bears had a chance to put it away with this 41-yard field goal.
Pinheiro for the win. The Chargers kick is up, and it is no good. The Chargers win. No good. Pinheiro misses. And the Chargers' losing streak comes to an end. They make just enough plays to get out of Chicago with a victory.
How about that? 17-16, the Chargers get a win. They go to 3-5. The Bears and all that at 3-4. Let's go to Buffalo. And the Bills have been on fire. Can they continue to get it done? This is really a gut check for the Eagles. The Eagles in this particular game, they have to win this game to basically stay competitive in the east of the NFC. And Carson Wentz, he had a TD.
Quick pitch to Sanders, who leaps into the end zone, 2-point conversion. That was the right move. That was the only thing you could do in a situation like that.
You're a mess.
To go up by 4 points.
You're a mess.
All you want to do is just win, baby, and that's what they did. The Eagles winning 31-13. At Buffalo, they moved to 4-4. The Bills fall to 5-2. I told you about this one. Anytime the Seahawks lose at home, or anytime they go west of the Mississippi, and they're the furthest team from any other team in the country, they're in the Northwest, they're going to win. They never lose when they cross the Mississippi, the M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I River. And they didn't here either. Metcalf for the touchdown, and you know what's going to happen with Wilson. He always gets it done.
Play fake. Russ looks. He's going to throw the back of the end zone. Wide open. It's Metcalf. Touchdown, Seahawks.
27-20, your final, as the Seahawks beat the Falcons. The Falcons are 1-7. No Matty Ice for this game. Seahawks go to 6-2, and they're right there. And Matt Schaub was your starter for the Falcons and likely will be again this coming week. And there's a controversy of a quarterback with the Panthers, but no problems with the 40. Man, I wish I was a 49er fan, huh? Despite Jimmy G, whether he gets it done or not, he had seven different receivers. Coleman had three TDs, 108 yards. You Niners are going for the gold.
Emmanuel Sanders, the point of the bench. They're going to screen to Tevin Coleman. Going left, gets a block. Here he goes again in the end zone. Tevin Coleman, touchdown, San Francisco!
7-0 Niners, and 4-3 go the Panthers. Let's go to New England, where the Browns went in. Baker Mayfield and company. Brady, two touchdowns. The takeaways were clutch, too. Patriots.
Brady takes the snap, looks over the middle with a pump, dances in the pocket. Now he starts to roll to his right. Throws Brady to the end zone for Edelman. Dives in. Touchdown, Patriots.
That's the way you move in the pocket.
I love the color guy that has a lot to say. That final 27-13 in favor of the Pats. They're 8-0. Undefeated like the Niners, 2-5 are the Browns. Jaguars, Lions, Saints, Titans, Rams, Vikings all won. Also, the return of Drew Brees with the Saints, and he put up 300-plus yards. We'll step away when we get back. Lighters up. Dope is next.
Symmetry Medical Spa wants you to laugh, love, and live again. How, you ask? Symmetry Medical Spa is offering FemTouch. FemTouch is a medical, non-invasive urinary incontinence procedure that will control bladder leakage and tighten the vaginal wall. It only takes 2 to 3 treatments and only 5 minutes of your time in our office. Symmetry Medical Spa always offers free consultations, and for a limited time, you can receive $1,000 off. Easy financing. Lands are available. Call now, 702-749- and ask about their free Botox special. Se habla español.
Gents, Seth Williams here. It's time to reload. Move past all the supposed male enhancers, free testosterone products, and get her done. The answer? Trim Care. The hormone replacement pellet therapy will once again make you the boss in the box. Take it from me. Got her done. Energy levels up. Emotions are balanced. Motor running like a freight train, and it restores your mental sharpness. For more than half a year, your testosterone levels will be above or at the male standard, and you'll regain your throne as boss in the box. Contact Trim Care now at 702-878-8888. Tell them Seek sent you and receive a 10% discount. Ladies, get it for your man, and you'll be rewarded. 702-878-8888. That's trimcare.com.
Symmetry Medical Spa wants you to have the big, luscious lips you have always dreamed about. In just 20 minutes, you can have the lips you always desired, and for a limited time, when you buy one filler, you get Botox for free. Yes, that's right. No gimmicks, no fine print. Buy one filler and get free Botox. Get the lips to match your beautiful body and watch the heads turn. Call now, 702-749-7575 to schedule your appointment, or visit SymmetryMedicalSpa.com. Symmetry Medical Spa. 749-7575. Te habla español.
Man, I've been saving for a special occasion.
Looks like a quarter pounder, man. Led
Zeppelin. Hey, be careful with that, man. Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for, man, that show is dope.
420 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. Let's start with NASCAR. The feud continues, man. Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano. Okay? They were at Martinsville yesterday where Mark Chueck Jr. won the race. But these two guys just can't get enough of each other. They got into a brawl and their crews threw down. I'm watching this thing. And so Joey's calling out Denny, come on in. And so they start, he knocks him down. And the crews jump in and start pushing around each other. So afterwards, one of the reporters caught up with Denny Hamlin to talk about the incident.
Denny Hamlin, what happened there between you and Joey Logano?
Well, we were having a discussion. Everything was civil. And then, like Joey does, he does a little, you know, push and then runs away. So that's Joey. He's scared. He said, do you want to go? I said, yes, I'm here.
I want to go.
But then he runs away, so.
What was the altercation on track that led to it?
I got close off of turn four. It looks like we got together, and it looks like collateral damage. He blew a tire, but, I mean, he would probably say, it's your track racing.
You going to try and find him at this?
No, I don't need to find him.
That is awesome. That is Denny Hamlin talking trash to Joey Logano. Hey, Joey says, you want to go? Yeah, then he runs away like a little girl. You know what? Here's what I want. All these NASCAR guys are all between 85 and 90 pounds. Let's have a reality box off. Let these guys just go. I mean, they be going after each other occasionally, and when they do, it's nobody's going to ever get hurt. To me, NASCAR, trash talkers, dope.
I got one for your seat.
What you got?
How about this? Tiger Woods. When's the last time we heard about him?
Tiger sighting.
He won this weekend, the 2020 Champions, to pick up his 82nd career PGA Tour title. That ties him with Hall of Famer Sam Snead, who alone held that mark for 54 years. So that's a record that, 54 years. That's quite a long time for records nowadays. You know, not back in the day. Also, how about this? His odds to win the Masters went from 12-1 on the future, dropping down to 8-1. Remember the times when you used to be able to bet will he win all four or three, and your odds were still like 4 or 5 to 1 because he was that good? Now, Masters, should have bet him before weekend.
That's pretty dope for Tiger. He won most of his big events in the majors back when he was in his 20s. I mean, he set records there, but for him to catch up with Snead at 82 at this point in his career, Zozo? I don't know, but he won that tournament, and that gives him what he needs. And from this point, a Tiger sighting is, I guess, a good sighting, so that's pretty dope, I guess.
Come on, that's dope!
Okay, it's dope. All right. This right here, I'll go and then you can come back.
Yeah.
This one right here was, and look, I don't talk politics, and I don't mention much at all about Donald Trump, okay? What's going on is going on, and that's just the way it is. But when he crosses the line like he did last night and steps out and goes to a baseball game when his team has just lost 2 in a row and he knows that he's going to be introduced, I mean, come on. He's under scrutiny. I mean, people are calling for his head. The Nats had lost 2 of them. And then he's at the game, and you know they're going to introduce him. And then the crowd started as they were already bitter. They're getting beat. They chant it.
Lock him up. 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 Lock him up.
And it kept going on. And, you know, you look at his face. You looked at the faces of the Trumps, and you could tell that his wife, she wasn't digging it. And his daughter, they weren't feeling good about it, but I think he embraced and enjoyed it. And listen, you won't have me say anything negative about him as long as he's in office. I just won't. And he'll stay in office as long as he can, because once he gets out, they're coming to get him. So he's going to run again. I mean, he's not as dumb as you think he is. He's got to rerun and he's got to win, or else he won't be in office. He'll be in some other place, and it's called a 4x10 in sale, okay? But I thought the crowd in D.C. was dope. That is so awesome. They're pissed. We won 2 on the road. We just lost 2 on the road. He's coming? He better go down to Houston and watch the game there. That's pretty dope. What you got, dog?
Oh, man. That just reminded me of another one that I may have a second dope here in a second. But
good.
For now, I'm going to take you to one of my favorite places in the whole world, Tampa, Florida, home of strip clubs. Deputies arrested a man for hurling a pair of nunchucks through the rear window of an SUV during a road rage incident. Leonardo Fernandez, faces charges of throwing a deadly weapon into an occupied vehicle, criminal mischief, and violation of probation in connection with the incident that occurred noon Saturday. Okay. So I got a couple of issues with this. First of all, you're mad. You're driving along. You're getting angry. And the person in front of you, like, stops. And so you're going to go. You're going to do something crazy. You have nunchucks. At what point do you go, these are now throwing weapons? Like, what part of your brain goes, nunchuck? The thing that Bruce Lee used that, like, yeah, you can, like, hit people with. But instead, this person's brain goes, let me throw him. How do you throw a nunchuck? And also, how are we classifying a nunchuck as a deadly weapon? He got charged with throwing a deadly weapon. How is this a deadly weapon?
They're nunchucks. You saw Bruce Lee kill people with that.
I saw him kill people in a movie. Anyway, the fact that he also violated probation, Leonardo Fernandez of Tampa Bay, Florida. You're dope.
He is a dope. Everything that happens in Florida. This is a good one. You'll like this. Let it shine. As cold as it is here. A man in North Carolina named Ronnie Foster was traveling to the doctor for his last treatment for colon cancer. So on the way, he decided to pick up a scratch-off ticket at a convenience store about 15 minutes away from his home. Good thing he did. That scratch-off ticket won him the sum of $200,000. So Mr. Foster says he has great insurance, but this will make it a hell of a lot easier. How about that? He's going to get his final treatment, chemo treatment, final one. And it's the day before he had won a $5 ticket. So he took that $5 ticket and rolled it over and won $200,000. That's awesome. That's incredible. All right. So there you have it. Lighter's down. Dope is in the books. Good stuff. Nunchucks.
Hey, nunchucks. There was somebody in Florida who threw an alligator at somebody.
What?
And they did, you know, one of the smaller ones, not a huge alligator, but like a baby, a little bit bigger than a baby alligator. Like, and they got them for throwing a deadly weapon, too, because if you think about it, alligator.
That down there is where they, and I mean, they do this as activity. They toss dwarfs.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Dwarf tossing.
In Florida.
Yeah.
And
I think they outlawed it here in Vegas because they started to do it here some in Vegas, and I think maybe they outlawed it.
That's terrible. Those are people.
Right.
Little people.
Stick with the alligators and the nunchucks and the throwing stars.
Okay. All right. We're headed to the phone lines. Andy Isco of Logical Approach. Andy, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well, Seat. Hope it was a good weekend for you.
Everything's rolling. You know, I've been staying away from the book. I may load back up coming this weekend, but I took a beating in baseball this summer, so I kind of cooled my heels for a bit. And every game that I said I would have bet yesterday came in, but I didn't bet it, so I'm okay. It's okay to enjoy games and watch games and things of that nature.
I think we're going to have to start calling you Charlie Brown.
Let's start you with tonight's football game. Andy Isco, Logical Approach here on the show, Power Play. And this one right here, the Dolphins, they traded Drake away. They're running back, so we know what they're doing. It's pretty obvious they're tanking. But at the same time, the Steelers, when you have two teams and both teams are struggling, the Steelers are at home. The Steelers kind of still have a chance if they start to win. The Dolphins don't. But still, is there any danger of a team that's a two-touchdown favorite against a team that's winless?
Oh, there's always an opportunity because, you know, the organization may be tanking, but the players are not tanking. The players are playing, to achieve certain contractual incentives that, based on performance, might give them nice little bonuses. They're looking to impress other teams for perhaps an opportunity to play there, either via trade or through other situations during the offseason, for example, looking to keep their jobs. And also, that's just the way they're taught. That, you know, professional pride, any athlete is always going to be competitive, may not always succeed, but they're not going to go out there not to win. It's, you know, coaching and management may put the team in a position where they're not likely to win, and they would benefit for that by some draft choices. But do you think a player wants to lose his job to a draft choice the following season? Of course not. So the players are going to play. That being said, you still have to have the talent, and I think that the change in quarterbacks from Rosen to Fitzpatrick makes Miami a better football team. But then you do have to wonder about the unsettling impact that all these trades, including one just today, and the thought that there might be another trade or two happening within the next, well, not quite 24 hours, but let's say, I guess it's about 21 hours from now, or a little bit under that, as I think the trading deadline is 1 p.m. Pacific tomorrow, and that might have their focus not on the task at hand, which is going to Pittsburgh tonight and play as hard as you can, play as well as you can. They're not going to be concerned about covering the 14-point spread. They're going to be concerned about winning the game. On the other hand, you've got Pittsburgh, 2-4. They're not out of things yet. They still have 10 games remaining. They have a rematch with Baltimore, the current division leader. Doesn't appear as though Cincinnati won't. Does not appear that Cleveland, barring some sudden turnaround, will present much of a challenge. So really, Pittsburgh has its eyes set on Baltimore, who leads the division right now, but certainly with 10 games remaining. We've already seen Pittsburgh play a good game earlier this season. I think it was Cincinnati. They beat something like 27-3 a few weeks ago. Rudolph, the second-string quarterback, the backup to Roethlisberger, who's out for the season, back this week. Wouldn't be surprised by a good effort. Earlier, I thought I could make a case for Miami, but now, upon further analysis, they just are so weak offensively. Pittsburgh still a defensive-oriented team, rested, and I think that they will be able to. Start all this by saying I've not played tonight's game. But right now, if I were looking to play the game, I'd have to back Pittsburgh.
Yeah. The only way they lose this game, in my opinion, is they have to beat themselves. They're favored by 14 and 44 and a half. And then let's move now to tomorrow's baseball game. Last night, Astros did something that I guess no World Series, in my recollection, has happened. Every team is winning every road game.
Now the 3-1. And Springer hits it in the air, deep to left field, and you can kiss it goodbye. A two-run home run for George Springer, and a 7-1 lead for the Astros.
That would be your final score. Alvarez also went yard. Andy, has there been a World Series that has gone six or seven games where the road team has won every game?
Well, no. I mean, it couldn't go six games. It would have to go seven,
right?
Because if it went six games, the road team would have had to win one game at home, either games 3, 4, or 5. This is actually the fourth time that a team has lost the first two games at home. Or actually, this would be the fourth team that a team has lost the first two games at home and then has gone on to win the World Series. No, there's never been. This could be if Washington wins Tuesday and Wednesday. Yeah, they would be the first team, or it would be the first series in which the road team won every game. We have had a number of series that have gone seven games with the home team winning each game, but never won for the road team. For that to happen, Washington would have to win tomorrow, or at least to set it up, they'd have to win tomorrow night to set up a game seven, where we don't know, but it's possible Max Scherzer, who was scratched from game five last night, might be able to pitch. But when you have the kind of, I guess it's sort of a nerve damage that he had with something in his neck, where he couldn't lift his arms above his shoulder, might be very difficult in 24 hours to be able to, A, pitch effectively, or within, I guess, would be 72 hours, to A, pitch effectively, and B, pitch deep into the game.
Well, in this ball game, and you're right, it's weird. He said he woke up and he couldn't put his shirt on.
Couldn't dress. He had to have his wife dress him yesterday, and he got a cortisone shot into the neck, but not quite sure how effective that would be. But, you know, Washington's got other things to worry about before whether Max Scherzer would pitch a Game 7, and that involves winning Game 6.
As Andy Isco, logical approach here on the show, Power Play, and that's why you don't cheer until it's over. If you bet a game, you don't count your money until you get your money and cash that ticket, because the Nationals were all but basically champions. At least they felt that way, I'm sure. You go into Houston, they're big favorites. You're feeling good about yourself. You take care of business. You beat them twice. Then you go home and get swept the three games, even though I don't like the format at all, Andy. Every other sport is 2-2, 1-1, 1, and maybe someday baseball will catch up with modern times. I don't like the 2-3.
Well, I think the difference is somewhat due to the fact that we no longer have the All-Star game determining the home field, but you don't have interlocking schedules. Yeah, you have interleague play, but you may not necessarily have the two teams in the World Series play each other, so that, yeah, you go by the better record, but Houston did not demonstrate that they are a better team than Washington head-to-head because they didn't face each other. Even in the NBA, even though you may only play twice a year against your, let's say, Golden State would only play Cleveland twice a year, at least they had that to go by as far as determining who theoretically should have the home court advantage, even though it may not necessarily go, as I think was the case last year with Toronto and Golden State.
Yeah, I do like the Astros. I mean, they're the better team overall as far as record, but I'm just saying that the format, I believe it's better if it's 2-2, 1-1, 1, because if it's, in this case, it turned out where the Astros escaped by winning those last three, but they lost the first two at home. Therefore, they lost the advantage of having the home field, but they have it back.
The other thought that I have in mind, and it may be specific to baseball, is because it's played outdoors, if you were to have 2-2, 1-1, 1, that would have additional travel days in there, which would almost certainly mean you're playing into the first week of November.
I get your point. Tomorrow, it's Steven Strasburg and Justin Verlander. Verlander, about .180 favorite, 7.5 under. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and of course, we've heard the last few days about Verlander's 0-5 record in the World Series, so I'm sure that that's been brought to his attention. Not that you have to bring anything to the attention of someone who's pitching to win the World Series in any game, whatever it is, especially a Game 6 or a Game 7. At the same time, Strasburg has been an outstanding pitcher over the past month and a half or so, and I understand why Houston is the big favorite. I think they were slightly larger than this in Game 2 when the series was still only 1-0 Washington, and a lot of people. Let me go back and take a look at exactly what that line was. But I think what we saw was a lot of Houston liability in that first game, and even into the second game, such that when Washington was up 2-0, Houston was finally made a decent sized underdog for the series at roughly plus 2-1, down 0-2, losing both games at home. I almost have to take. Well, I'm gonna make the suggestion that if you play the game, if you play Houston, you might want to lay the 1.5 because it could become a one-sided game with the Astros winning and Washington facing the inevitability that what started to be a promising series up 2-0 is going to end up in four straight losses. On the other hand, the quote-unquote value in the game based upon the line is with the Washington Nationals. Do you really want to bet against Strasburg, who's been pitching so well? He pitched well in that opening game of the series. Which, by the way, is another way of saying, if you like Washington, you probably look under the 7.5. If you like Houston, you consider the 1.5. And because of the fact that these games seem to get out of hand in such a situation, that maybe the game goes over the 7.5. You look at Washington up 2-0. All they needed to do was win one out of three games and know that they had a chance in Game 6. If they didn't wrap it up in 5, that they would have a chance in Game 6. Now they're going to face elimination in at least one game, and obviously, if it goes to a Game 7, both teams will face elimination. So Verlander, I expect him to pitch well. It's the question of the offense. And keep in mind, Washington, after scoring those 12 runs to win Game 2, held to one run in each of those home games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
We'll see if Verlander could get out of the first inning unscathed. That's been his issues. College football with Andy Esco. One game, there's like 9 ranked teams that are buying this week, so you don't have a slew of great college matchups, but you do have one in the SEC. Georgia at Florida, where they'll kick it off at 12:30. The Bulldogs 5.5 and 47, Andy.
Yeah, and of course this game will be in Jacksonville, so it's sort of a neutral site for both fan bases. Formerly referred to as the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, they frown on using that, but I don't have to adhere to that. I'm still going to call it what it is. It's the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. It's a great event for students and alumni alike, and the drinking hopefully won't get out of hand, but the football should be of a high quality. Of course, Florida 7-1, Georgia 6-1. Georgia having lost that game to South Carolina a couple of weeks ago. Florida losing, what was that, the LSU game a few weeks ago. Georgia, a 5.5-point neutral site favorite. I'm kind of leaning towards Florida plus the points here. Florida's known more for its defense than its offense, which remains a work in progress. Georgia, I think, has been disappointed with the quarterback play that they've gotten. They've had a few more scares than they really needed. Their game against Kentucky a few weeks ago, I think they ended up winning that maybe 24-0, something like that, but the offense was struggling. I might take any points I can get. I'll keep an eye on this. I'm showing one place in town, actually two places, South Point and the Cantor Gaming, CG Technologies, has Georgia as a 6-point favorite. I'm seeing it as low as 5 at places like William Hill and Wynn, and 5.5 at most of the other places. So if the lines stay where they are, you've got a place where you can get plus 6, places where you can lay minus 5. We'll see how the line moves during the week, but right now I'm inclined to be on the Florida side.
Andy, let's go to Halloween evening. Spooky, isn't it? Week 9 in the NFL, Thursday Night Football. The 49ers, unbeaten, trying to stay that way as they go into Arizona.
Yeah, and I guess it would have been fitting if the Jets were involved, considering Sam Darnold's comment last week when he was mic'd on Monday Night Football against New England. In fact, I wonder, I didn't hear if there were any personal fouls called on Jacksonville defenders yesterday, if when they sacked Darnold and Darnold got up, they yelled boo at him. I don't know if that was the case, but nonetheless, they will be playing in Arizona. The 49ers, which opened last week in the advance line at the Westgate as 7-point road favorites, of course, off their very impressive win over a good Carolina team yesterday. Arizona game in defeat at New Orleans. They could not really mount much in the way of an offense, settling for 3 field goals as Drew Brees made his return for the Saints. But the Cardinals had won 3 in a row. They're clearly showing signs of progress against or under first-year quarterback Kyler Murray, first-year coach Cliff Kingsbury. But once again, as they did on Sunday, they are stepping up in class. When the lines came out yesterday, it was adjusted from a 7-point road favorite for the 49ers to an 8-point road favorite, and they were bet up to 9.5-point road favorites by the end of day the day. Well, as of right now, the line came out. Let me repeat. 7.5. When they reposted yesterday afternoon, they were bet up to right now 9.5-point road favorites. Normally, I would be looking at Arizona as a Thursday night home underdog. Road teams have done very well on Thursday nights this year. I don't have the exact record in front of me, but I know that they've won a few games, including Kansas City's win at Denver a couple of weeks ago. This past Thursday night, the road underdog was Washington. They didn't win the game, but they covered the 16.5-point spread at Minnesota. So there's a situation where based upon what we've seen so far, San Francisco is not at a disadvantage, not a great deal of travel. I would like to take Arizona as a home underdog. I don't quite know what to think. I could go with the thought that when Arizona finally stepped up to play a good defense last week, or yesterday, as was the case at New Orleans, they struggled. San Francisco, don't know if they faced a strong offense yet defensively. You could argue they've already beaten the Rams, which is considered a good offensive team, though not nearly at the level that the Rams were last year. And even yesterday, Carolina's been a pretty decent offensive team. They're unbeaten at 7-0. They're playing with a great deal of confidence, a great swagger. I probably won't play the game because I feel uncomfortable taking Arizona. At the same time, I feel uncomfortable laying the points. It's a situation where maybe the San Francisco defense plays as well as they have, so maybe I will look under the total of 43.5.
Andy, before we go to Sundays, I wanted to jump in when you mentioned Sam Darnold talking about he's seeing ghosts. When they entered to play the Jags mascot was dressed as a ghost yesterday before the game, which
I
thought was
pretty
cool.
I understand there were some signs in the crowd as well alluding to that comment. But, and then maybe it just shows just how good that New England defense really is because, you know, when you're saying you're seeing ghosts, it means, you know, effectively, you're seeing people that aren't there because they're there and then they're gone.
Right.
That's how active and aggressive that New England defense was last week, and they continue to be. But once again, let's see when New England play. Well, the only really offense that New England has played this year was Pittsburgh in Game 1 when Roethlisberger was still healthy, and they held the Steelers in check. Maybe we'll see a little bit more when New England faces Baltimore this Sunday night, but I guess it might be when they face teams like Philadelphia, Dallas, and Kansas City when Mahomes will be back later in the season.
Andy, let's roll down to that game and stay on the topic of the Patriots. They're -3.5 and 44.5 at 5:20 Sunday night against the Ravens. They're going to see their defense will get a test because now you're going up against basically almost an option quarterback in Lamar Jackson. This will be a fun one.
It will be, and I also think that Bill Belichick relishes the challenge of going up against a Lamar Jackson. You know, we've seen how, and once again yesterday against Baker Mayfield, how successful Belichick and the Patriots are against young quarterbacks, and Lamar Jackson fits that that mold of a quarterback. His second year, so much like Mayfield last afternoon, Sunday afternoon. I know that we saw last week a line on this game of the Patriots 6.5. Now, of course, Baltimore had the weekend off with their bye. When the line came back yesterday afternoon at about 3:30, the Westgate posted the Patriots a 5-point road favorite, and it got bet down to 3.5. And I'm sure it was the wise guys, the professionals, who took the 5. What's interesting is they could have had 6.5 last week, and I imagine, in fact, that line, which was posted last Tuesday, actually got bet down from 6.5 to 5.5 within a few hours on Tuesday, and then later in the week, I think it was on Friday or Saturday, the line went down to 4.5. So the professionals have probably gotten as much out of this line as they can as far as taking Baltimore. Maybe there's a little bit more of sharp action to come in with this line sitting at 3.5 and saying that they can get more than a field goal. But you could argue that the value now might actually be on New England at 3.5, and I'm not sure I want to bet against New England. At 6 or 6.5, I might have considered Baltimore, but at 3.5, and even possibly 4, I might still consider New England. You know, the Patriots were rather workmanlike, just not quite going through the motions, but they had that early 17-0 lead on Cleveland, made Baker Mayfield very uncomfortable. His receivers didn't help. Turnover didn't help. Maybe the Patriots are saving up the required energy and focus for a game against Baltimore, which I think in their minds, and in the minds of most, represents more of a threat to their remaining unbeaten than did the Cleveland Browns yesterday, even though a lot of the sharp folks were on Cleveland, although I think a lot of that also had to do with the poor weather that was anticipated and actually showed up. It was known, you know, 24 to 48 hours in advance that there were going to be those rainy, windy conditions.
Andy Isco of Logical Approach here on the show Power Play. Andy, let's look at this game, the Minnesota Vikings at Kansas City, the question of Mahomes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, was this game sent out Kansas City 3.5 and then it moved the other way?
I don't believe this game was sent out last week because I believe, well, Mahomes was already injured. Remember, he was injured in the game. What was it? I think it was a Thursday night game against Denver when he got injured. So we knew he was going to be out when the line came out on Tuesday. They did not put a line out because I did. There may have been some talk about Mahomes. Let me just check on that. I thought that the talk about Mahomes being ready earlier rather than later would have come out after last Tuesday's lines came out. And, yeah, I'm looking at Minnesota-Kansas City. I just got that sheet. Yeah, there was no line on that game last week.
Okay. So 3.5 and 47 is where the Vikings stand right now as the road favorite, with Mahomes being a question mark.
Yeah, I'm actually showing the only place that I currently see a line out on that is at Circa. And I forget, maybe they did put a line out last week on that game because they, I think, were aggressive. But I know we saw that they were one of the places that put a line out on the Seattle-Atlanta game where we didn't know Matt Ryan's status until Saturday afternoon. I'm showing Minnesota 3, minus 20 and 47.5 at Circa. The thought is, and what I heard over the weekend, is that Mahomes probably won't play in this coming week, week 9, but they expect that he will be available to play the following week, week 10. So I think that at least until that is confirmed, we may not see a line at most places. Minnesota's been a very good team this year, although their struggles have been on the road. They did win that game against Detroit 2 Sundays ago at obviously on the road there. They did win Thursday night, that 19-9 win against Washington, not very impressive. Kansas City showed some good things Sunday night, falling down 14-0 against Green Bay and then coming back to actually take a 17-14 lead, seeing the game tied, seeing Green Bay go up by 7, coming back to tie, giving up that big play that saw the Packers take that 31-24 lead, then making the decision to punt with about 5 minutes to go, but their defense couldn't hold the Packers, and the Packers never gave up the football when the game ended. So I saw some good things out of Kansas City. I might very well take the points with Kansas City, even if it stays at 3. Certainly 3.5 would be more attractive. So it'll be a lot different facing a Kirk Cousins as opposed to facing Aaron Rodgers. Although, to be fair, Kirk Cousins has had 3 very, very good football games in a row right now after the offense got a bit more aggressive. But and I was surprised because, I shouldn't say I'm surprised. Andy Reid has long been criticized for his in-game management. Where he's been very strong has been in his pre-game planning. The Kansas City Chiefs were prepared for Green Bay, and even though they fell behind early, they managed, as I mentioned, to come back before halftime to take that 17-14 lead. So I think the Chiefs will be well prepared to take on Minnesota. Whether or not Minnesota will do things during the game that causes Andy Reid to make some poor decisions remains to be seen. But I'll be looking for reasons to play the Kansas City side.
Andy, let the folk know where they can find you, my friend.
Well, columns in gaming today, finishing up the final baseball column for the season, and making the transition over to the NBA. Started that a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, look at several football NFL games for each week. And gaming today will hit the sportsbooks every Wednesday morning.
Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, Seed. Enjoy the game tonight and have a good week.
You take care. Good luck to you. Andy Isco, always on top of it, gives you nothing but good information. I think that's a pretty good suggestion he made. If you'd like the Astros, give up the 1.5. Don't pay the $1.80. That'll drop you somewhere down around maybe $1.25, $1.30. Yeah, why not? Why not go that route? It's safer. Yeah, I guess. Don't listen to me when it comes to betting, okay?
I've learned that lesson.
Thanks to Andy Isco of Logical Approach. Also to Doug Douglas, who was in here running the first half. He's kind of busy, moved on. But J-Dog, he's... Garrett's got me. He's working things. Appreciate you, folks. Also, Andy Isco. To all you people out there, keep in mind, next is coming Thursday. We'll be back up. Meanwhile, keep your chins tucked low, your guards up high. We'll see you on the radio. More of the show, Power Play. It's Power Up, Power Out.
Go with Reliable, ReliableBanner.com. Cooler temps mean spending more time outdoors. Kids soccer, weddings, Halloween parties. So make your message stand out with high-quality custom banners and event signage from Reliable Banner. We offer the best variety for the most value. So get your totally free estimate today. You can order online at reliablebanner.com or visit our office on the corner of Smoke Ranch and Decatur. Great prices with fast delivery.
Go with Reliable, reliablebanner.com.